I'm not the one that needs to watch their back.
This doesn't have to end in a fight, Tony.
You just started a war. Stay down. Final warning.
I could do this all day.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello, and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week I'm joined by author, artist, and video mogul David Wright, who's been a guest on several episodes in our past, to have a full-blown, flat-out, spoiler-filled discussion of Captain America: Civil War. Welcome aboard again, David.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We have a topic that's near to both of our hearts. We both, in the last 48 hours or so, somehow managed to get to the theater and see this movie, and we are now ready to dig into it. Now, earlier today, for those of you listening, earlier today I recorded episode 93, which was my instant take reaction with no spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie yet, go listen to that and see the movie. Then come back here and listen to this episode, because David and I are going to spoil the heck out of this movie. Now, before we get started, I've got my peach lemonade here. I'm going to pour me some so I can keep myself from getting too...
Okay, so this is totally spoiler-filled. We're going to go full spoiler.
If people don't want the spoilers, listen to episode 93. This should be episode 94. So, and can you believe we only got 6 more episodes? We hit number 100.
Awesome.
You were on number 2, I believe, in fact.
On number 2 and number 52 and one shortly after that.
Wow. Amazing. And so we're almost to episode 100. I knew what episode 50 was going to be very early, and I was recording people. I did people's, like, what would you have on a desert island? But I have no idea whatsoever what episode 100 is going to be. So we'll see.
All right.
Here we go. Well, I don't have any notes. I don't know what notes you have. But I think we'll just have a sort of a stream of consciousness discussion about this movie, because it totally warrants it. I think that the first thing I want to throw out there, we can kind of take turns throwing out stuff and talking about it. But I think, and I do have quite a few questions that people sent me on Twitter today that we can look at too. But I think the first thing I want to talk about is that I asked the question of the intelligentsia earlier today, is this the shortest amount of time for a major superhero Marvel or DC property, that the shortest amount of time between the comic book story coming out and the movie? And the only other thing people could think of would be Winter Soldier. And it's pretty close.
Yeah, well, Winter Soldier, Civil War, I guess that kind of runs together in my mind in terms of publishing. Mm-hmm. But, it's like Bucky was dead for 60 years, and Brubaker brought him back, and like the next year they're doing a feature film. I'm like, it seemed awfully quick. One part of you wants to see the movies adapt the classic stories that you remember from your childhood, and they just happen to be adapting whatever's being published in the last 2 or 3 years. But obviously I've got no complaints. All these movies have been awesome.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to Captain America particularly, they're just looking for the stories that really translate well into a modern movie. And after his origin, I mean, you really have to look at the Brubaker stuff. And then, and that, you know, and then I said on the show earlier today that honestly, when I was watching Civil War, I was shocked at how, I mean, I knew that Winter Soldier figured into it some way, somehow, but I was shocked at just how pivotal, you know, he was to the story. He's the MacGuffin. He's the fulcrum the whole thing turns on. He totally replaces all the stuff that was contrived by Mark Miller and everybody in the original series. And so, you know,
what he does, what the Winter Soldier does is it really obviously motivates Cap. It becomes about his friend and the personal stake he has there. Also, I think it's what helps keep this a Captain America movie and keeps it in the, if you restrict your view to just the Captain America solo movies, there's still a logical progression between those three movies. And you know, that's, I guess, why that character becomes so critical.
Well, and my point kind of then is this really was another Winter Soldier movie. I mean, this was like Winter Soldier Part 2. I mean, in other words, Civil War, the comic book story, was entirely contrived to be a Civil War, and everything else was in service of getting them to fight. Whereas this movie really was just a continuation of the Winter Soldier story, and they happened to fight over it along the way almost. I mean, I know they introduced the idea with General Ross, who's now the Secretary of Defense or whatever, that they went with this idea that the government wants you to be more under... I mean, they sort of turn him into Henry Peter Gyrick, right? The government wants you to be more controlled. But honestly, it was much more about Winter Soldier than it was the government wants you controlled. There were like two or three scenes where they're talking about the government wants you more under control. Everything else was about the Winter Soldier as the cause, you know, of the catalyst of everything that happened.
Right.
Because it was why the Black Panther was chasing him. It was why Captain America kept doing everything he did to protect Bucky, the Winter Soldier, you know. In fact, that was my main objection to Captain America in this movie and why I thought that Iron Man was on the right side. That's why I was so happy last night and today about saying all this time I've been Team Iron Man, is because I was for Iron Man just because I wasn't going to root against my favorite character. That just wasn't going to happen. But I felt like Iron Man in a lot of ways was right because it got to the point, I mean, early on, and I want to know what you think about this, but let me lay it out for you. Early on, I thought Captain America was just saying, let's be fair to my friend. Let's don't just try him and convict him and execute him. And that's fair. But later on, it becomes, I'm going to sacrifice every other friend I have to protect this one guy. And that's where I thought that Cap kind of went off the deep end. What's your thought about that?
Well, first of all, let me say that obviously Tony is presented much more reasonable or, you know, I guess, you know, relatable in his viewpoint here in the movie than in the comic book series, where he was just basically a villain. I think they failed to keep that even-handedness in the comic book series.
Absolutely.
Certainly, that was my perspective reading it. As far as Captain America goes, I mean, this Bucky's guilty of some pretty brutal stuff, and he's defying a lot of authority to try to, you know, save him and rescue him or run away or whatever. But at some point, I think it changes from just wanting to look out for his friend and give him, you know, the best shake and make sure he gets fair treatment. But then it also became about the principle of being free from that kind of government regulation, the government control, you know, that he stated earlier on that he didn't want, because then it's basically up to the government to decide what fights they can get involved in. And he, I guess the events of the Winter Soldier movie kind of put him in a, I mean, he fought the government there too, so, or at least a corrupt element of it. So I guess he, had less of a problem with it here. Also, it kind of prepared him for that.
Yeah. I was certainly more pleased by far with how Iron Man and how Tony Stark were portrayed. I mean, didn't you get the sense when you read the original comic book series? And I don't want to dwell on that too much because a whole lot of people have never read it, not interested in it at all. And that's fine. We're going to talk about the movie, but just really quickly to lay that comic book series to rest. I mean, I've always said it was contrived in the sense that they decided going in what they wanted to have happen, and then they shaped everything to produce that result. including writing the characters out of character in order to make them do things that were necessary to the story. And that's terrible writing.
Yep, I agree. I do agree. And this is not only what's so wonderful about this and kind of the tapestry of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that not only is this a very logical progression from the Winter Soldier movie, but it's also a logical progression from the Avengers Age of Ultron. And they just, they kind of both meet here, and it's just, it becomes very organic. So it makes sense that it could lead to something like this.
Yeah. You could see that they were setting this up way back, and certainly with Ultron. I like that they got rid of the parts from the comic story that didn't work, and you touched on some of that, but they also kept some that did, like the mom that was upset about her son and confronted Tony. In the comic book, I think it was at the funeral, and here it was like in the hallway of the hospital or something. And that was, I thought that was very effective because it's very personal, and you could just, I thought that Downey did a really amazing acting job of just being stunned by that and conveying how he was, you know, almost in denial that what they had done. Now, that's the one thing I have to say. All right, this is the thing that kept bugging me, is that either the parents of the victims, like that lady, or General Ross, who we know already has it in for superheroes anyway, they kept acting like all that stuff that happened, killed people, was the fault of the Avengers. And I kept thinking, no, if not for the Avengers, it would have been infinitely worse.
Exactly. Well, then, you know, that puts you on Team Cap, that kind of thinking. So, you know, be careful.
Well, I mean, but it's just reasonable, though, that, I mean, that's a good point. But they seem to go, but I mean, everybody seemed to kind of accept that. And I kept thinking, why didn't somebody stand up and say, no, it wasn't us. We weren't the ones that made the freaking city fly up in the air. You know, we weren't the ones that sent a horde of aliens through a dimensional portal or whatever. You know, we weren't the ones that hijacked half the helicarrier fleet and was going to, you know, conquer the world or whatever. So how is it our fault that people got killed when we stopped those things from happening? You know, and there's another irony to it too, is that one of the big complaints about the DC movies has been their total disregard for collateral damage, whereas Marvel now has built basically two movies, or at least around that very question. Isn't that? It's like salt in the wounds for DC, isn't it?
It's almost like you got to wonder if the Marvel movies would be emphasizing that if they hadn't been for the negative reaction to Man of Steel, but.
I don't know. Yeah. It's a question. It's a good question. I mean, it's almost like a happy coincidence that they're like, not only are we killing you at the box office, we're even looking more moral and righteous in the process.
Yeah. What was I going to say about that? The scene where Tony... I'm getting feedback. Are you hearing the feedback? Anyway, the scene where Tony's confronted by the mother down in the hallway, I think it was an important scene to kind of, you know, to make the stakes real, to make them personal. But it also, I was thrown out of it a little bit that Tony would just now consider a year later the fact that there were people that died in Sokovia. I mean, you'd think he would have already kind of dealt with that kind of emotion before now, but I guess, you know, apparently not. I mean, I guess that's what really got him, you know, ready to sign the Accords, put him in position for this movie. But it just seemed odd that, you know, that he hadn't really considered that before, apparently.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, they still had to do some contrived things, I guess, but they did a lot better job.
You know, Cap won, right? Cap won the fight.
No.
He won the fight. You can argue if he was right or wrong, but he came. He stuck the shield in the arc reactor and walked away and left Tony on the ground. So,
well, they cheated. I mean,
how's that cheating? That's fighting.
Think about it. All right, here's how it played out. All right, we can sell this real fast. Here's how it played out. The two, like, let's go to the airport in Leipzig, or Leipzig, whatever. Leipzig, tomato, tomato, whatever. So they're at the airport. They're fighting. Cap and let's see, who goes with him? Falcon, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. I can't even remember now. Was it Falcon?
That flight was crazy. That flight was so
awesome. Amazing. Yeah, amazing. But who it was Cap and one other person on his team. It was Winter Soldier, yeah. Two of them bugged out, right? The whole thing was a diversion so they could get away, get on a plane, fly away.
Right.
And so they chicken out and leave the fight before it's over. That's Cap running away. There's number one. And then when Tony figures out that it wasn't Winter Soldier that did the crime, what does he do but risk his own freedom by getting turned into Ross? He risks his own life, risks his own freedom to go solo over there, although he doesn't know the Black Panther's following him, because Black Panther's awesome, to go and help Steve. And so he goes to help Steve, and then when he's there to help Steve and the Winter Soldier, he finds out that freaking Winter Soldier killed his parents in cold blood. And then Captain America takes Winter Soldier's side again. This guy has crossed half the world to help him out at great personal risk, has been told that this other dude killed his parents, and Cap still takes the side against Tony, double teams him, nearly kills him, and leaves him there again. That was dishonorable, disgusting, repulsive. Iron Man was right. Iron Man did everything right, and I'm very ashamed for Cap.
But Cap won the fight, right?
No, he cheated. He double teamed him, and you know as well. I mean, Tony. If Tony hadn't been holding back because he was trying to help Steve, he would have just repulsed Steve in the face, and that would have been it.
Well, I like the fact that Tony saw his mistake and totally owned it. And was going over there to help him. Yeah. I mean, I think that's an important beat. Yep. You know, he's still a good guy. He's still a hero. There's no reason not to root for him. And you didn't see. I didn't see the twist coming with Howard Stark. So,
right.
At that point, Steve looks pretty bad. He's like, "Did you know?" And I was like, "No, he didn't know. He didn't know. Did you know?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I went, "Oh, Steve, what are you doing to me?"
Hey. I know. And that's when Tony has that great line where he says he's my friend. And Tony says, "I was too," you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What do you do with that?
Friend you have to help this one guy who turns out to be such a murderer? I mean, I know he's not completely under his own control, but
See, that's just it. In the comics, hey, if you're under mind control, free pass. I mean, that's a legitimate legal defense. Hey, I was mind controlled.
Yeah.
You know, that gets everybody off the hook. You know, Hal Jordan is forgiven and, you know, everything else.
You're right about that. Wow, man.
I know not in the cinematic universe yet, but it's certainly well established for comic book readers that, hey, if you're mind controlled, you're off the hook. It's not your fault. So you can't blame Bucky for killing Tony's parents.
No.
But obviously, you know, Tony is getting slapped in the face with this information, and how do you process that? But here's what happens, though.
I would have probably killed Bucky. Knowing full, if I had an Iron Man armor suit on and knowing full well he was mind controlled and probably couldn't help it, I'd have probably still killed Bucky.
Yeah, but look at it at this point. Now, at this point, Tony is unauthorized to have traveled to Siberia.
Yeah.
And he's defying the government accords that he has signed or has agreed to. And so he's there as a vigilante. And now he finds out about his parents, and now he's mad they're fighting. Now it's just pure revenge. Now it's just hatred and revenge. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And he's not even there in an authorized presence because he snuck away. So he's immediately thrown away all these government principles that he had just said he was all about. So...
Right.
You know, at that point, he's not much. He's not much different than a villain in that moment.
No, at that point, he just wants to punch somebody until they punch him and knock him out or something. I mean, that's just like a standard human reaction. You know, you just want to wail on somebody and either kill them or they knock you out and the fight ends or something. But by the way, I do like that we didn't have Gyrick in this movie, but we had Hen Ross, Peter Ross, Guy Ross.
You mean Thunderbolt Ross?
Yeah.
He definitely had the Gyrick, Gyrick role there. But speaking of characters named Ross, I was thrilled to see Martin Freeman play Everett K. Ross.
Yes. Oh, I mean, when he was cast, we just knew, right? We're like, oh, that's exactly who that's going to be.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know.
Man. When they cast him, I said, that's that. I didn't even remember his name, but I said, that's the guy that used to follow Black Panther around in the
old Christopher Priest series. Christopher Priest series.
I'm like, oh, that's totally who he's going to be. And so when he came out and they said he was Ross, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was his name. That's him. That was hilarious because it was just so obvious the way he looks. He looks exactly like the character in the comic book. I mean, he probably modeled him on that. So, cool.
I want to kind of get into the little bullet points of the stuff we loved about the movie. But I want to say this about the whole Team Cap, Team Iron Man thing. The way it was presented, you know, within the context of the reality of that universe, you know, where you're talking about, do you know where Thor and Hulk are right now? What would happen to me if I lost, you know, 2 30 megaton bombs?
Yeah.
You know, you're right. If you've got that kind of firepower and you're that like uncontrolled or you're running such a loose operation that you don't even know where your most powerful weapons are, you know, I understand, you know, that's a problem. So I get that part of it. And what's Cap's motivation? And I'm going to take care of my friend that we know is guilty of all these terrorist acts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to make a case for Cap in that case. I think if you look at it literally within the context of that world, you got to go Team Iron Man. But if you look at it symbolically or metaphorically as, you know, liberty versus security writ large on a superhero canvas,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, and they become more symbols of, you know, personal liberty versus government.
Yeah.
Then you know, that's where I'm going to land on Team Cap's side. So the strongest. So I thought Team Cap came across with a weak argument, really, in the movie. I mean, I've read reviews now where they said it's just completely even-handed and no one seems more right than the other at any point. I don't know if I totally agree with that. I think Team Iron Man comes across in the movie seeming more right. If you don't look at it as some kind of larger like symbolic level, if you're looking at it literally within the context of the story, but the best argument Cap makes, in my opinion, is when he says, you know, what if they don't let us go fight somewhere we need to be?
Yeah.
If we sign up for this, then the government gets to choose what's right and wrong, what we get to do or not do.
Right.
And you know, to me, that's a strong argument. What are you going to say about that?
You know what? It makes me wonder if they didn't realize that in the comics version, Iron Man's side was portrayed so poorly that their argument was so weak that they kind of boosted it and didn't correspondingly do anything really with Caps other than add the Winter Soldier in.
Yeah, and I would say Cap won in a different sense, other than just, you know, kicking Tony's butt by shoving the shield through his armor. He also one in the sense that he got the freedom he wanted in the end. I mean, which is he's not operating under United States government. I guess he's a fugitive in Wakanda now. I don't know how it's going to play out, but he kind of ended up in a place where you've seen it in the comics before, where he's not a government employee. He's not a government symbol.
Right.
He represents the American ideal. He represents the American dream, not the American government. And so to me, this is like his full arrival into that type of representation. So he got what he wanted. He's not under the control of the government. Now, I'm not clear where it stands at the end of the movie. Are these accords in effect, but they're only binding to the people that signed it?
They didn't say if they approved it, I don't think, right? They said they had to be ratified, but then we never really got word on if it got ratified or not.
And I guess if it gets ratified, then anybody that uses superpowers without the express order from the government to go do it, then you're a vigilante and you can be arrested.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can tell, unless I mean, they didn't really address it. They didn't come back at the end and really kind of, you know, address how it all ended. And plus the fact that Cap got what he wanted for himself, but Bucky's frozen.
And, yeah.
so really, I mean, he didn't get any of the other Avengers away from this plan, as far as I know. I mean, Rhodey's in the hospital, and Panther's back in Wakanda with his with his Bucky sickle. And so
everybody else is in jail, right? Oh no! At the very end, they imply that he breaks them all out. You see them all in jail, like you're about to see a Suicide Squad movie, and then Steve shows up and credits. So yeah, I guess they imply that he got them all free. So that tells me it's going to be like there's going to be one team of Avengers that's outside the law, and there's another team that's within it. I mean, to me, it does not end with unification.
No, I need to go back and watch it at least one more time because I was trying to remember now. How does it end? Is it Cap that's busting him out at the end? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't see any of the action. It's all implied because you're seeing the knocked out guards on the floor and everything. Yeah. And then the last shot is like Sam Wilson smiles through the bars and it cuts the other angle and it's Steve's, you know. And there's Steve. So the implication is that he's getting him out. The next thing that happens that you don't see, the first thing that happens after it cuts to credits, the thing you don't see is him actually getting them out of the cells.
Okay.
So
all right, but they're on the run or something. I mean,
yeah, they're against, they're outside the law. So it's
It's only the ones that were on his side, right? That's like
Just the ones that were in that they were incarcerated. So Hawkeye, Ant-Man, Falcon.
And Scarlet Witch.
And Scarlet Witch was in a special cell, so
yeah.
So yeah, I don't know what happened there. So
I mean, clearly by the end, we are to understand that the government side with Ross is no longer the sensible side. He's basically a villain. I mean, that's kind of what they did is they took the villainy Iron Man had in the comic story. And gave it to Ross so that Iron Man could be kind of like trying to go along with it, but you could still see him wrestling with it. That was one thing I liked about it is all the way through the movie, even as Tony kept being like, come on, Steve, just go along with this for crying out loud, you still saw him questioning it all the way through. He was never comfortable with it himself.
Mm-hmm.
You always got the sense that Tony was going along with this just to keep the peace because it seemed like the best option of several bad options. But he was never enthusiastic about it, you know. And it was a lot of it was guilt.
Yeah, and I guess the letter that you hear in voiceover that Tony is reading at the end of the movie,
yeah,
it's enough for Tony to forgive Steve. I mean, apparently it kind of there's reconciliation that's implied there enough that he's basically not taking Ross's calls and. And you know, I guess the implication is that they're still going to be friends, but I guess the next thing that's going to happen for these characters is Infinity War or whatever they call now the next Avengers movie, and they're in pieces. I mean, you've got half of them are outside the law, so it's going to be real interesting to see what happens. As a matter of fact, I don't even know are we for sure getting Downey Jr. in the first Avengers?
I think contracted both of them, but I'm not positive. I feel like the first one now has got to be putting the pieces back together, and the second one's going to be more Thanos, right? You got to think that Thanos has a minimal role in the first one other than just setting things up, and it's really going to be about dealing with this situation post-Civil War. Very different movies.
Yeah, when it was called Part 1 and Part 2, I assumed that Part 1 would end with Thanos would have all the gems and be ruling the universe, and then it was going to take all the cavalry showing up in the next movie to stop that. But now that, you know, the story seems to be shaking out a little bit differently, I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I don't think they're changing the story so much as just changing the title because they felt like it didn't accurately reflect the way the movies were going to be.
Yeah.
A couple of things I want to observe right quick, and I want to kind of talk about the characters some. I did that on the morning show this morning. I talked about each of the characters, but I left a couple out, and I want to get your take on a couple of them, too. I had to point out that this is one thing I wanted to mention. I mentioned on the morning show that the two characters now that were in this movie that haven't had a solo movie or haven't been featured in solo movies or don't have a solo movie about to come out. The only ones are The Vision and the Scarlet Witch. So I desperately want a Vision and Scarlet Witch movie.
I loved the moments that we got with them in this movie. I mean, there's nothing that really that I didn't love about this movie. Yeah. But the Vision of Scarlet Witch stuff was very interesting to me. I love the scene in the kitchen where he's trying to cook, even though he's never actually eaten food before. and the way it's a slow reveal that he's actually containing her there. Yeah. And but even when he stops her, there's like a tenderness to the way he touches her. You know, it's like even though now it suddenly seems a little bit darker, there still seems to be like real feeling there. So, I mean, I think I just really like how they played the beast between those two characters.
Absolutely.
I thought it worked well.
I want a movie. I want a Vision Scarlet Witch movie desperately. That would be so awesome. Okay, so let's run through some of the characters. Now, let's start with the two I forgot to mention this morning on the show. Because they're not on the trash can, right? I was looking at my little trash can, and they're not on it. They're not on this poster I have. I'm looking at right now either that I'm using as my cheat sheet, and that's Spider-Man and Ant-Man.
Oh man! Ant-Man or Black Panther?
Spider-Man and Ant-Man.
Okay.
I didn't mention Ant-Man this morning, and he's not on the trash can. Okay. Maybe he is, and you just don't see him. But I mean, let's start with him because we got a lot to probably say about Spider-Man, but. Ant-Man has really become a very fun character. I wanted Henry Pym, but on further reflection for a movie universe, I think I'm happier I got Scott Lang. What do you think?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. Because he has that, I don't know if it's the personality or if he just brings to the dynamic, if he brings to the mix, the same thing that Hawkeye brings to the Avengers in the comics that's missing from the movies.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit of that rogue, a little bit of that smart aleck. Mm-hmm. You know, he's kind of in over his head, but he's fearless about it. To me, he kind of adds that little element to the personality mix.
How amazing was it that we got Giant Man?
Oh, my Lord. That was a total surprise to me.
I totally blindsided me. I couldn't believe
it. I avoided
it. You saw it coming when he started to do it. I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's going to turn into Giant Man. And he sure did. But
when he said, I hope I don't tear myself apart. I was like, "He is this really? Good grief, it happened." I mean, he was like falling into airplanes like it was a Godzilla movie.
Yeah, in slow motion. Yeah.
I was watching Power Rangers all of a sudden. But yeah, I don't know. Did they keep it out of all the trailers? Because I avoided them. I never saw it,
and I was very glad I didn't.
That was amazing.
They totally gave away the Spider-Man stuff in the trailer, but they kept that out.
I can't believe we got Giant. We got Giant Man. I mean, first of all, what does that do to the next Ant-Man movie? I mean, why is he even going to bother being Ant-Man at that point?
Right. Well, because he's a wasp. The whole
thing, like now with all the crazy action going, and you're cutting between these different matchups and the big battle there. And by the way, it's between a big giant pair of legs in the background. I mean, it's just crazy that actually happened. I was blown away by that. I thought that was awesome.
And
that Giant Man's appearance.
Yeah.
And then also Red Wing.
Oh right, Red Wing. Absolutely. When the little thing came flying over, I'm like, oh no. Oh no. Surely he'll have that, and then there'll be a real bird fly in, and like he's like, I'm not calling it Red Wing. I'm like, oh man, it's Red Wing. Oh my god. So
yeah, I like that. I like that kind of translation to the cinematic universe, and it adds to Falcon's capabilities, and it certainly, you know, has obvious tactical advantages for the team. So I thought that was a really good addition to the character of Falcon for that to be Red Wing. I don't know if that came from the ultimate version of the character because I never really read it, but I did. Even though I would personally love to see an actual red bird, I really like Red Wing.
I guess we can't have the pet Avengers in the cinematic universe now. I guess.
Yeah.
Not an animal, but oh well. You know, that speaking of the Falcon, I love how they do the Falcon in the movie. The Falcon is way more impressive in the movies than he ever was in the comics. I mean, I like Sam in the comics, but in the movies, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's they really gave him a lot of ability. You know, you got the bulletproof wings and that the Red Wing recon thing and Iron Man goggles. I mean, he has none of that in the comics. He's got like actual like feather wings with a little motor hidden inside it somewhere. So, Falcon's a lot cooler, I would have to say. Even though I want him to go red and white, I want to see the pure red and white.
Exactly. Yeah,
just like the pair of camos, you know.
But I gotta say, one of my favorite moments, even though it was in a kind of a grim way, I still loved it. Was after Rhodey crashed, and Tony was sitting over him, so upset. Which, you know, by the way, Rhodey kind of is to Tony the way that Bucky is to Cap.
Yes.
And so here is Cap's actions causing Rhodey to nearly get killed. You know, I felt like Cap, I mean, that Tony was as justified as Steve ever was about protecting his friend. But what was funny, he's standing there, and the Falcon comes walking up like, man, I'm sorry. And Tony doesn't even look up and just zaps. I'm just like, yes! I mean, I love you, Sam. You're one of my favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe characters. But in that moment, right, I just...
Yeah.
As long as he's okay, right, you just knock it down. God, I love that so much. That was awesome.
It's like the Hulk's sucker punch of Thor in the first Avengers movie.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
As long as Thor doesn't get killed or have a broken neck, it's all fun. So, yeah
exactly. But back to Ant-Man real quick. A couple of bits. The hanging onto the arrow and flying through the air on Hawkeye's arrowhead.
That was awesome.
Awesome. Getting inside Tony's armor.
That reminded me of that great story where Hulk knocked him, where he knocked Hulk out. Iron Man knocked Hulk out. And it froze up his armor, and Ant-Man had to go inside of him to unlock the armor so he didn't like suffocate in it or whatever. So those were both directly from the comics.
Yep, and really, he's just everything with the giant man. I mean that was just ridiculous. That was just awesome fun. That whole fight where. I want to keep running down the characters, but this is what has me excited. The Avengers movies, they're going to be written by the same writers and directed by the same directors, right?
Yeah.
This is the same pair of writers and then also the Russo brothers. Mm-hmm. Well, the Avengers are going to be in great hands. I mean, you basically get an Avengers movie here, and this fight shows that they're not afraid to, you know, like, they understand the power set of each character and the kind of the scope that these battles are going to take place on. And we got like five or six characters on each side, and this was crazy. And they're talking about something like 67 characters in the next Avengers movie. Yeah. I just can't imagine how crazy these battles are going to get.
The Russo brothers are really good at blocking out scenes, fight scenes, so that everybody kind of gets their own space to do something. And the camera angles and the shots are different depending on the character. Like, did you notice the most jittery, shaky cam scenes in the entire movie were when the Black Widow was fighting?
Yes, I did consciously notice.
I almost got a headache when she was fighting because it's almost like every time she would be fighting, the camera would be in an earthquake.
Yes.
But you didn't get that as much with anybody else. It's like they use completely different filming styles, cinematography styles with every character. The Russo brothers movies have a definite feel to them. I mean, this movie felt like more of Winter Soldier, didn't it?
As opposed to an Avengers movie?
Age of Ultron, say.
Yeah, it did. I think what I was trying to articulate that in my head earlier today. I think what it is that basically the stakes are smaller.
Yeah.
You know, you had the Battle of New York, you had the Age of Ultron. These are huge world catastrophes. This is a smaller story, but still involving the Avengers. So I think the fact that it's the stakes are smaller and they're more personal, but obviously the main focus is going to be on Cap and Bucky, I think that's what makes it feel like a Winter Soldier movie. By the time Thanos shows up, it's going to feel like an Avengers movie. It's not going to feel like a Captain America movie.
Black Panther, we got to touch on.
Oh yeah,
man, I knew he would be cool.
Yeah,
but Chad Boseman, right?
Chadwick Boseman, yeah.
what a charismatic actor who just radiates charisma and power. I mean, he's you know, the Black Panther is in the comics was arguably one of the lesser powerful characters, but you certainly didn't get that impression from this movie, did you? I mean, he was very impressive and fun.
I've always liked the character because he looks cool, but until Christopher Priest started writing him, you know, he didn't seem to like really be all that impressive. And of course, with Priest writing him, you know, I fell in love with the character. It was like a spot on take on the character. Mm-hmm. This is not quite the same, but obviously, I think it does take some beats from it. But Boseman owns the character from the get go. I was impressed with his African accent. I mean, he's right. He's played Jackie Robinson and James Brown, and here he is playing an African king. Pulls it off. Mm-hmm. The costume, when I first saw the images, you know, I didn't think I was going to like it, but it totally works.
Yeah.
And just his fighting style and the strength that he's showing, the fight he had with Bucky, I mean, it's all strong. We got to see a glimpse of his female bodyguards, which I think comes from the Christopher Priest run.
Right.
So we got a little glimpse of Wakanda at the end, so I'm sure that's going to play heavily. You know, we'll see a lot more of that in his movie. So, excellent. I thought excellent introduction of the character. No, an organic way to introduce a new character without having to stop a given origin story.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's...
Yeah, this is how you do it. You got Spider-Man and Black Panther introduced into the Marvel Cinematic Universe during this movie, and it never felt like they diverted away from the main story to do it.
Yeah, and you don't have to stop. It seemed like you either had to have an origin story or you had to be an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
You know, being an agent was like shorthand for we don't have to give an origin. They're just an agent.
Right.
And this shows that, hey, you know what? There's been some other powered characters already operating.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the world they live in. So I thought the movie absolutely succeeded in organically introducing, or I should say successfully introducing both Black Panther and Spider-Man. In a way that, you know, didn't require origin stories, and I think, you know, proves that you don't have to for the audience to buy into what you're giving them. You don't have to anymore. Where I think, you know, I think movie going public is on board enough with superheroes that, you know, origin stories aren't absolutely necessary to bring them along.
Yeah, I think that originally, I've always said that origin stories are the easiest story for a movie studio to do with superheroes, and so they just keep redoing the origin story because they don't want to go beyond that. And what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done is go far enough beyond that into episode after episode after episode, you know, that they don't have to keep doing the origin stories anymore. In fact, I was thinking that what the Marvel Cinematic Universe with 13 movies now has really become is like a TV show that we go and pay $12 every 6 months to watch a new episode of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. They are taking the model from TV and I guess comics to some extent and applying it to movies. You know, it's never been done before, and they're kind of redefined Hollywood. I mean, it's truly remarkable. The whole story, I think, is really going to be worthy of study in the future. It's just amazing to see it happen.
It's what they've done. And I mean, you know, the cool thing is that DC is allowing us to not take it for granted. Because it would be if all we had was the Marvel Cinematic Universe, then we could just say, oh, I guess this is easy. If you look at DC and go, I guess it's not so easy, and this is really pretty remarkable what they're pulling off here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Marvel's doing something right, and you got to have the right people in charge of it. I don't know, you know, getting into like Batman versus Superman is a whole other show, but
I haven't even seen it yet. Not really.
But it's Marvel keeps succeeding. They keep making the movies different enough, and they keep making the conflicts different enough. So it's, you know, I can speculate on, you know, what could possibly happen after the next Avengers movies. But right now, I'm just enjoying the ride. I was trying to count all the characters. There's like 12, you know, powered characters in this movie.
Yeah, at least 12.
It's, you know, it's awesome. Fun stuff. Spider-Man.
The last two characters I wanted to ask about. Yeah. Well, we need to talk about Spider-Man. I think it's cool that we actually had a movie where Tony Stark is kind of hitting on Aunt May.
Yeah.
Never thought I'd see that.
And we the words even sound a little disturbing, although, you know.
And we had Captain America making out with the grandniece of his old girlfriend. I mean, there was some odd romances going on. And, of course, the Vision and Scarlet Witch is an odd romance, too. So we had three very odd semi-romances happening in this movie, you know?
Yep. The stuff with Sharon was interesting. I guess, I mean, obviously, Steve didn't know that she was related to Peggy before now. And
we all knew, but he didn't, right?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it so well that it took me off guard that Steve didn't know it.
Exactly. I'm like, he doesn't know? Oh.
Yep. But, you know, there's I actually posted this recently, but there's that famous speech from the comics where Captain America talks about, you know, there comes a time where you have to plant yourself like a tree by the river of truth and look the world straight in the eye and say, you move, which is, you know, one of Cap's greatest speeches. And they gave that to Sharon Carter. She totally says that in the eulogy, in her speech at the funeral.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really cool touch. Mm-hmm. I like that they did that. But how do you... how do you start making out with the grandniece of your girlfriend that just died? I mean, that's just...
I don't know. But, I mean, in the comics, that's the way it's always been. I mean, even she was even going to have his baby. I don't know how that got left off. I don't know if they ever picked back up on that. But I want to make sure we talk about Spider-Man. Now, what did you think about this version of Spider-Man compared to the two previous versions we had?
I liked it a lot. I mean, to me, this is Marvel's Spidey. For the first time, it really feels like Marvel's Spidey. They got a kid young enough.
Right, he's a kid.
He's already got his powers. He's already struggling with money. And
thanks, you know, because how many times do we have to see that story over and over?
Exactly. And also, you know, the wisecracking and stuff like that. But also, the fact that there's other superheroes around. I mean, Spider-Man is the ultimate team-up character. And he plays so... Even though I still consider him a solo act. And, you know, not belonging on a team or anything. Despite what Bendis did with the Avengers. But he teams up and bounces well, you know, so well off of other characters. And he's never had that opportunity before. I would love to see him be like the wild card character, because he's the team up guy. He could pop up anywhere, whether it's on Netflix or in anybody's movie. You know, let him be kind of the unifying element that Nick Fury was early on. But no, I like the character a lot. I thought, even though there were changes to the design and the uniform that maintained the classic look, and some of the moves that he had looked more like out of the comics than anything we've seen before. There's that one quick shot where I think he's crawling over the helmet of Giant Man. He just kind of crawls over it, just pure spider fashion. There was something about the way he was positioned there that just, like, I just felt like they had nailed it. Mm-hmm. And it's also, I mean, I think this is the first time they've cast a character truly, they've cast an actor truly this young for the part, so...
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And he had some of the best lines in the movie, like when he stopped Winter Soldier's arm. He's like, you got a metal arm. That's so cool, you know.
That's almost like Vision lifting Thor's hammer. I mean, we've spent the whole movie seeing how strong this arm is, mm-hmm. and Spider-Man just kind of catches it and goes, whoa, that's cool. He's like, do you know what you just did?
That reminds me, by the way, I wanted to ask you about this. During those fight scenes there where Spider-Man's doing all that and everything – I was very impressed by how, even during the battles, even as they're battling with each other, they were all very reluctant, and they were all being very, they were still like saying, you know, are we still friends, you know, and there was an interesting chemistry going on where they were clearly not heroes trying to destroy villains. They were heroes and heroes that were having a disagreement. They still cared about each other, even as they're trying to blast each other down, you know. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a take on that. I think it was important that none of them turn heel, you know, that the audience didn't lose sympathy or empathy with any of them.
With any of them, exactly. That's exactly what I'm getting at. Is they all maintained that they were heroes, and it made it all very tragic in a way. I mean, usually when the heroes go and fight the villains, you're like, yeah, now we're going to get some justice. And here it's almost like, oh, it's like a car crash. Like, oh no, they're going to fight each other. Oh, I don't know if I want to see that. You know?
Yeah. It really. What it does is it just the fact that they're fighting raises the emotional stakes of the whole movie.
Right.
And also, you know, you got to wonder, it's like, you know, what world dominating threats are running loose at this moment while y'all are busy, you know, throwing punches at each other. You know, the world needs the Avengers, then the world needs the Avengers looking after the world, you know, not falling into airplanes on a, you know, or an airstrip somewhere.
There's a couple of questions I got over Twitter I want to throw out. Still have a couple of minutes left. We haven't talked about the villains. I mean, Crossbones was just your basic standard Captain America villain. I'm not even interested in talking about him. He served his purpose.
I called this before the movie came out. He was basically treated the same way Batroc the Leaper was.
Yeah.
You know, he was just like, he's like the opening action scene in a James Bond movie. You just kind of,
yeah,
and then he's gone. He's off the stage. I
mean, right. You jump off the cliff with a parachute and you move on. But the question says, were you disappointed at all with the villain behind everything? He seemed rather small time to me. That's what our questioner says. This certainly was not the Baron Zemo that we've all, you know, grown up reading in the comics, who's basically evil Nazi guy.
This was
a Zemo that I actually had sympathy for.
Yeah, and he's not even German. He's Sokovian or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope that we... How's it left with him? I mean, I want him to come back with the purple mask on and everything.
He was in the prison, wasn't he? Locked up where Winter Soldier had been.
Yeah, I'm not quite remembering that. But
seems like he was locked up in that same cell that they had Winter Soldier in. And wasn't Everett Ross tormenting him or something? Or
yes, kind of, yeah. That's right. They had him locked up like that. I'll tell you what confused me with Zemo's plan. I thought all along he was trying to uncover, you know, what happened in December of 91, and he finally got his answer, and so he went off to Siberia where all the other Winter Soldiers were. And I thought that was really cool. Now the threat level is going to go up. This might plant seeds for future movies. You know, is this the cinematic version of the Winter Guard? Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, you know, that's a good villainous plan, and it's going to kind of raise the stakes for everything. And then apparently he gets there and just kills them all.
Yeah, that surprised. Did you not think the movie was going to end with a big battle between our three heroes on one side and a bunch of super soldiers on the other?
Yeah, I thought it would, or they might even escape to become the Winter Guard later to be a future threat sometime in the future. But he killed, and so it's like, so what? I'm confused on, did he do all that just to get Cap and Iron Man in a room together in Siberia to have them fight while he watches through a window? I mean,
apparently.
What was the point of that whole plan of going after the mission report of 1991 just to go? Why he must have had his own reason separate from getting the Avengers to fight each other to have these other Winter Soldiers dead, but I don't know what it was.
I think he wanted to kill them, and I think he wanted to get Cap and Winter Soldier and Iron Man together so he could reveal the truth and then let them kill each other.
Yeah, so he obviously a big part of it was he had that video and wanted to put them in the situation, you know, where he calls it. Are you getting weird feedback?
No, sometimes it records weird feedback that I don't hear.
Okay.
But I can hear you okay right now. So this has happened with John too. We'll get an echo. Are you getting kind of a double echo on your end?
Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, it may not sound good in when I listen to the recording, but we'll do the best we can. I don't know what's going on. Ever since I changed the software on this thing, it's been weird. So
To answer the reader's question, Zemo's a little bit underwhelming, I guess, but obviously this movie is about heroes fighting heroes, and it certainly does not disappoint on that level. And I think the biggest thrill for fans that it delivers is the creativity in the fight choreography and seeing the powers interact with each other and to see all these characters at once going at it. Just tons of fun, and I think they absolutely nailed it. Yeah. The exact details of the villain's plot, like I said, with killing these other frozen soldiers, I'm not entirely clear on what that was supposed to all be about. But you know, yeah, was he the most compelling villain ever? And you know, no, but he didn't need to be in this movie. So you know, to me, it's not that big of a negative.
Yeah, I agree. The villains to me were almost inconsequential in this movie. This movie was about the heroes having a disagreement with each other and the fallout from that. I think the biggest villain in this movie is Ross.
Yeah.
So, another question we got in, and one I wanted to ask you about anyway. I was going to ask, we're talking about the Vision and Scarlet Witch. We didn't really get into much about them beyond just their situation there. But it says, has Marvel changed Wanda's powers entirely from the comics? Reality bending is out, psionic telekinetic is in. I kind of agree, but I guess you have to do what works in a movie. And I've been very pleased with what they've shown her doing. In fact, I would argue that her powers make a lot more sense in the movies than they ever did in the comics.
Yeah. The thing about Scarlet Witch is it's like her powers have always been kind of ill-defined. And I think magic in the Marvel Universe has always been kind of ill-defined anyway. But and different writers have different takes on it. Obviously, you're supposed to think in terms of probability altering or chaos magic. I guess it's basically telekinesis that she's doing. It's still a case. You got to be real careful with Scarlet Witch because it can become a crutch. You know, what different spells does she have? You know, I mean, how many different ways can she conveniently find a way to save the moment? But you know, obviously, I think we see her contain one blast, right, and or funnel the gas out of the building, whatever, and then so we see her use that same ability again, but it backfires on her. So, yeah.
She looked great. I wasn't thrilled with her little jacket in the Ultron movie, but I loved her big, long scarlet coat that she wore in this movie. I was saying this morning that really looked like a cape. It looked like it was very evocative of her costume in comics where she has, like, the big cape. She looks a big Superman cape, but that big flaring duster jacket I think she wore in this movie looks great. It really is evocative of the look she should have.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I'm always gonna want the classic comic book costumes, although I realize they don't always translate well to live action. But I definitely think her look looked better here than it did in Age of Ultron.
What do you think about how the Vision looks? I mean, I like that he's wearing sweaters and long-sleeve shirts and stuff. That's always kind of cool that he's trying so hard to be like a normal person when he's this bizarre, you know, robot with – well, I know he's a synthesoid, but in the movie he's basically some kind of mechanical – you know, he's not a synthetic man. He's a robot basically, but an android. But I mean, I almost feel like they made him look too exotic. He just looked – to me, just looked like a guy with red skin – that green costume. What do you think?
I think it works. I mean, I prefer him not going around wearing sweaters, although I get it. but there's a level of creepiness there where it's a little bit unsettling. It's like he's trying to be normal. He's kind of acting normal, but you know, it's like that uncanny valley. You know, he's not really human, and it kind of, you know, it can kind of creep people out, which I think serves the character well. And I like it. Yeah, I'm pleased with how they're handling the Vision. To me, the character rings true.
Yeah.
I would like for him to look more like his classic look, but I think they're hitting the right notes with him.
And I was thrilled that we actually got to see him use a bunch of his powers in this movie. You saw him float a lot. You saw him float through things.
And then his density increased so far, right? Yeah. And did we ever see him again after he was like shoved down into the core of the earth?
I forgot about that. We didn't really see him again. And I like that he talked a little bit about his gemstone that he got up there. Which I guess is connected somehow to the Infinity Gems, right?
Yeah, it was the gym. It turns out that was the gym inside the gym of Loki's staff, Loki's scepter. So
yeah, interesting. Well, yeah, see all that coming up again in Avengers 3 and 4, basically. So, all right, anything else that we need to cover? I feel like we've talked about all the characters.
Well, I think the fight choreography, the action beats, how the power sets and the personalities interact, it's all spot on. I think they really got Captain America's costume right. For I think this is the costume. They need to stick with this one. Now, obviously, they messed it up in the first Avengers movie. They have improved it ever since, and it was fine in Age of Ultron, I thought. But I think this is this. He looks good in the costume in this movie, and so I was really pleased with that. And I like all the shield slinging that takes place. And I thought, you know, the storyline was very logical and presented all these characters kind of in an organic way. So it's a home run. It's a grand slam. I don't know how, if you've watched the other 12 Marvel movies, I don't know how you're going to watch this and not love it.
Right. It's time for a film festival, I think. I'm going to have to go back to the beginning and watch all of them all the way through.
Yeah, we got a little junior science bros with Tony and Peter. And I guess it's been announced that Tony will be in the Spider-Man movie. And so that was an interesting dynamic. That was a little bit out of left field that suddenly Tony's in Queens and knocking on the guy's door. But
yeah,
but it was a lot of fun. Just tons of fun.
I like that they both went recruiting. You know, Tony went and got Spider-Man, and Falcon went and got Ant-Man, and
yeah, and I guess Black Widow got, I guess Black Panther was, because she said her idea was to go downstairs and get the guy that was down there.
Right. That was really cool. Yeah, just such a great movie. So many cool things in it. It was totally awesome, totally epic. Yeah, don't know what's left to say. I may have another conversation with another person or two before this week is over, depending on how it goes. We may have even more to dig into, but I think we've covered a pretty good bit tonight. So thanks for coming on and talking about it, David. And throw out a quick plug for your book. You got another one coming out soon.
Yeah, so thank you very much. I've got a novel called – I have a series called Galahad's Doom. The first part's called My Brother's Keeper. It's put out by White Rocket. You can find it on the White Rocket website. If you search Galahad's Doom on Amazon, you'll find it easily. It's a medieval fantasy, sword and sorcery kind of thing with a strong spiritual theme, and it's been received real well. The second part in the series – I hope will be out this year. I have completed it, and it's in the hands of my editor. So it's just a question of if he's brutal on me, we may be pushing the end of the calendar year. But if he's happy with what I got, maybe it'll be out sooner rather than later. But it's the work is done. It's a matter of just going through the revisions on it, and I'm real pleased also with how that one turned out. So if you like. Medieval fantasy action, knights and castles and swords and wizards and that sort of thing. It's worth reading. I think you like it.
And if you like the Avengers, don't forget Assembled and Assembled 2 that we put together that covers all the various eras of the Avengers. And then Assembled 2 talks about Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, and about Ultron and Kang. So, all right. So thanks a bunch, David, and we'll let you go now. And the Rocket's going to get out ahead of here for another week. And we'll see you guys down the road.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.